and welcome to episode 33 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panellists include runner-up for both the 2014 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014 Australian Nationals, Liam Prasad.
Hey there, how are we doing?
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
Hey.
2015 Store Champion and the best-dressed man in Netrunner, Hollis Echo.
What's going on, man?
Webmaster of StimHack and 2014 World Champion, Dan D'Argino.
Hey.
And I'm Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Dan. So there's a few things we want to talk about today, particularly because you're here. So one of the things you've been very passionate about is organized play, and particularly community-driven organized play and tournaments. Would you like to talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that I guess I took beef with when I was, you know, starting to play Netrunner was, you know, the state of organized play, basically like how many tournaments there were, what sort of prize support existed for the tournaments, and, you know, how I felt, you know, the whole tournament experience could just be better for people and, you know, in ways that I felt were, you know, easy enough to sort of implement that, such that they should. Basically, after, you know, playing in a bunch of tournaments, you know, for a year or so, playing Netrunner, and getting to the position I'm in now, we're at the point where we're tired of, you know, waiting for FFG to make major changes. They're a pretty big company, and they're pretty slow to, you know, change things in response to the demands of the community. Meanwhile, we've got, you know, StimHack going. We've got a huge community. A lot of the most competitive players are contributing on our website. So we just decided that we were going to, you know, put together tournaments ourselves and, you know, give out the sort of prize support that we want. We've been collecting sponsors, getting stores on board, you know, giving us money to let us run tournaments there so that way we can fund prizes and stuff like that. So we'll get into that later.
What were the two or three top things that, when you say you felt like there were some things you want to see changed, what were the two or three top things you really wanted to see changed?
One thing is I thought that there should be more tournaments of sort of like regionals caliber, I guess. Like the store championships are great and so are game night kits and stuff like that. But the fact that there's just regionals, nationals, worlds, and then aside from that, like in the wintertime, there's no major competitive tournaments.
Yeah, we noticed that after sort of nationals and worlds, there just seems to be nothing for that last sort of three or four months of the year until the next store championship season starts.
Right.
And apart from your regular game nights.
Yeah, and even when they start, that's just store championships. Like, they're not particularly compelling, you know. Like you know, you can give or take a store championship. It's not really that important. But yeah, there's significant downside.
Yeah, so you want to see more large-scale tournaments. What else?
Another thing was we wanted more compelling prize support. There's obviously, like, FFG is, like, really deep on, like, promo cards, play mats, and that's pretty much it. And the promo cards are great. Sometimes the promo cards aren't that great because they print so many of them that they become, like, sort of ubiquitous, or, like, sometimes, you know, they're just not that cool of a promo card, and you can only play on one playmat at a time, so after you play Netrunner for a year, you know, you've got enough playmats. I mean, obviously, like, cash is a big incentive, and some people have, you know, people have different feelings about what a cash prize does to a tournament, but a lot of us at StimHack feel that having, like, a moderate cash prize, especially for, say, an invitational-type tournament, is totally okay, and we actually think it's a really good thing for, you know, getting players excited about coming to a tournament, especially if you can, like, win cash for a trip to Worlds or something like that. I think that, I don't know, Jesse, did you get paid flight to Worlds last year?
Yeah, so I think most of the national champions got paid flights, and ours was, we were particularly lucky in Australia. It did depend on what the Netrunner market was like, I think, in your country, and we were lucky that ours was large enough that I did end up getting flights, which was the only way I would have been able to go.
Got it.
I believe in 2013, the prize at the National Australian Championship was half the cost of your flights.
So
it's good to hear
that
they also put Jesse up in Minnesota as well. Like, we weren't aware that they were going to pay for accommodation as well, which was very
good. Really awesome. Yeah, so we want to, one of the main things that we're trying to do right now is we're trying to introduce tournaments where players within the United States, for example, can win a flight to Worlds. Obviously, it's not nearly as expensive, and, you know, they want to fly out national champions from around the world to participate in world championships to make it a truly international event, and I really commend them for that. I think that's, like, a hugely important thing for them to be doing, and it's great that they do it, but we just want to see more stuff like that.
I guess another thing, Dan, that I was thinking about is that I know they've got this tournament space in Minnesota that they want, where they want to run Worlds. But it would be nice to see some tournaments that are as big and serious as Worlds that maybe you can win flights to, that they might run else, either elsewhere in the United States or elsewhere in the world.
Oh, yeah.
That's obviously...
That's totally an end goal. Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, if the community-driven event scene gets so big that we can eventually support a whole other tournament, a separate tournament, I know for a fact that that's something that a lot of us have been talking about. We've been talking about, like, piggybacking a tournament at Worlds, like, so maybe we can have a tournament right before Worlds, but obviously there's, like, the stresses of having to play in Worlds, so you don't want to play, you don't want to worry too much about the tournament before Worlds. So yeah, Endgame, have a tournament that's, like, you know, super high prestige, that isn't Worlds, that's separate from it, yeah, that would be amazing. And that's honestly what I wanted to do with the StimHack Store Champions Invitational, and I think it was hugely successful.
Liam, you, like most of us, come from a competitive Magic background, and usually in which they have quite a lot of different high-level competitive tournaments, and like Jesse was saying, sort of their pro tours sort of happen all over the world, and you fly to different places. Would you like to see something like that happen for Netrunner?
Yeah, I was actually just what you reminded me of there, Dan, was a really old event that's no longer existing in Magic, which was the Magic Invitational.
I love the Magic Invitational.
Yeah, it was by far like the biggest prestige event you could win, and the old prizes were that there weren't even cash prizes or things like that. You would get to design a card. The way it fed in were that there were these massive, big what were called Pro Tours, which were at the time they were bigger than the World's Championship. You had to be a very consistent competitor over the entire scene to go to a Pro Tour, and then when you were consistently good at the Pro Tours, you would be invited to the Invitational. And so I think that as Netrunner grows, there's certainly capacity to do something along those lines, where we have these store champs, regionals, national seasons feeding into the World Championship, but around that we also have this parallel tournament structure where we have large events all around the world, maybe as a C region or an NA or a SA region or as a Europe region, and then in these large regional events or continental events, we can feed those into invitationals, just like you're doing with this StimHack Invitational. And I think that using the power of the internet is the perfect way to go about this. And part of the reason why I feel like Netrunner wants to have its own online presence or its own online emulator.
One thing that would be great about that is that while it was great at Worlds to have a national champion coming from quite a few European countries and from other places in the world, there wasn't the critical mass of a sort of clash of meta games going on. And I know that the European players brought some really different perspective to the game than a lot of the North Americans were expecting. So it would be nice to see North American players have a chance to maybe go and battle in Europe or to battle in some other neutral territory where there's, you know, more European players playing against maybe a smaller number of North American players, but still at that highest level. That would be really exciting. And I think one of the other problems with Minnesota is that for people who don't win a trip, it can be hard to justify flights from either Europe or Australia or Asia just to go to Minnesota when it's not exactly the biggest tourist attraction in the world. If you're playing in a city that you may want to go on holiday in a little more, it may be a bit more attractive for more people from overseas to pay to come as well.
Jumping in on that, if I look back, you know, like years and years ago, even when I played Pokemon back then, I think at some point they had a tournament somewhere in Hawaii. So, like, Jesse, you're spot on in, like, the actual location of where one of the largest tournaments for the game could be, because it's a much more attractive thing when you know, going to Hawaii as opposed to Minnesota. My question for you, Dan, was, you know, I really have enjoyed this actual, you know, the pro circuit idea. I really think it's really good for the competitive community in general. It's actually good for everyone who's a fan of Netrunner. What sort of challenges have you guys actually faced thus far with actually, you know, getting the tournaments organized and having prize support? Has it been more challenging than you expected, or has it been pretty simple?
First, I guess I'll say that I'm not as heavily involved with this as I was in the SSCI. I have been somewhat involved, but I do have Jesse Vandover here in the Mid-Atlantic region, who is officially, I think, the president or captain or something of the region. I forget the title that we're bestowing upon people. I'm sort of a little bit backup, but as far as the difficulties are concerned, honestly, it has been incredibly smooth, and it's the sort of, it feels like dominoes are falling. Like, it feels like the straw that broke the camel's back. It's just like this flood of, I don't know, I guess the way in which we are organizing the ANR Pro Circuit, and I know we didn't really officially announce anything on the show yet, but you can go to anrprocircuit.com and check it out. We also have a Facebook page, and there's regions popping up all across the United States, so you should check it out if you live in the U.S. and you're looking to play in our tournaments. Anyway, but it's just been so easy, because the way that we've organized it is we have this one big umbrella organization, the ANR Pro Circuit, but we're not really, there's not really very much central control at all. The circuit was actually started in the southeastern United States with the Southern Megacity Circuit. Hollis, I know you're down there, you've played in one. So they started the whole thing, and then basically I think it was Spags and Aaron in the Midwest, they went ahead and they were like, okay, we want to do it here, and not only do we want to do it here, but we want to set up the infrastructure so that if anybody wants to create a region, we're going to let you know how to do it. And since then, we've got the Southwest, we've got the Pacific Northwest, and we've got the Mid-Atlantic region. We've got other people interested in making new regions, including one, I think, in, well, I don't know where else. But basically, the way it's set up is so easy for the players to get going that it hasn't been a huge workload on anybody. We've all just sort of divvied up everything according to where we live, and it's all just gone so smooth.
And so, Dan, how do these tournaments work? For those who aren't familiar, do you sort of pay an entry fee, and then that gives you a chance to win a part of a trip to Worlds, or what's the deal?
Okay, so here's how it works. The way it works from our running it perspective is what we've been doing is we've been going around the stores basically saying, we want to run a Netrunner tournament here. We want to take a portion of the entry fees that you collect for the tournament. You keep the rest. We're going to, you know, promote the tournament and get players to come out, so you'll still make money off of it. So basically, these are the qualifier tournaments with, I guess, like 8 to 12 of them in every region. So we have a bunch of those. This, you know, we get the organizers of the individual circuits to contact the stores and people who TO games at the stores to, you know, get that all set up. Once we have all the stores, we get all the dates, we make sure there's no conflicts. So then if you're a player, you just need to, like, look up where there's a ANR Pro Circuit qualifier going on at the store near you. You head to the store, you play in a tournament. It's pretty much just like a regular game night kit tournament with a big exception. So you'll play like your 5 rounds of Swiss with no cut or whatever. Instead of just declaring a winner and giving away the game night kit prizes, at the end of the tournament, we take the top 3 players and we give them an invitation to the regional invitational event, which happens, I think all of them are happening this September. So the way that works is once we get, you know, 3 players from every ANR PC qualifier in the region, we get those like 30 or so players. They're all invited to the invitational event. Everybody comes out to that event. We play a longer tournament with a cut, and the winner of that tournament will get a trip to Worlds as funded by the stores giving us proceeds from the entry from the qualifier tournament.
That sounds like a great model.
Dan, you mentioned before the SSCI, which is the StimHack Store Championship Invitational, which is something that StimHack ran, I think, via Octagon. Now, this comes back to, obviously, your passion for community-driven tournaments. So how did that go, and what was it all about?
Okay, so as soon as I, like, got done, you know, coming back from Worlds, everybody's like, so what are you going to do now? And I was like, well, I had this idea last year to run an invitational tournament. And I was like, well, we can just, what if we did a store champions invitational where we have a tournament where anybody who's won a store championship can play? The invitational aspect is to stress, you know, the competitive level of the tournament, help drive people out, feel like there's exclusivity, feel like you should be playing in it if you can, because, you know, you won a store championship, you deserve your spot. So we thought that would get players out, and it did. We hosted on Octagon, which is, if anybody doesn't know by now, a platform on Windows where you can, you know, play Netrunner over the internet. So basically, everybody who won a store championship could enter in our tournament for free. We hosted the tournament on Octagon this past April, so about a month ago now. And the tournament format was pretty much straight with FFG rules, regular tournament. We had about 130 players. We played 7 rounds of Swiss and cut the top 16 double elimination. In addition to just, you know, running the tournament and having a cool invitational tournament, something that we did that we thought was important was we put together a pretty high-level stream of the event with commentary. We really wanted to make it so that way it wasn't just for the players that were qualified for the tournament. We wanted to make those players a big deal and make it a spectator event because I guess one thing that left a bad taste in my mouth after Worlds was watching FFG's commentary They sort of put people in the commentary booth that really just didn't know what was going on. Team Covenant also did commentary, and their commentary was much, much better. And it just, you know, it just got me thinking, like, hey, Netrunner would be so much greater if we could, you know, get some live stream games with really strong players commentating, so that way, you know, anybody who's watching has a lot of extra insight into the strategy behind the game that they otherwise wouldn't have had because they just maybe missed something or maybe they're not as strong of a player, you know. So what we did was we had a pretty great lineup of commentators. I was obviously commentating. We had Sneaky Sly, who is the owner of StimHack, who doesn't play a lot anymore, but he's still a very very smart guy and a strong Netrunner player. We had Dean Tran, who's one of the strongest Netrunner players in Canada, who's also a pretty accomplished streamer. He's put on some really good streams and events up there. We had Sly Squid from A&R Black Cats, and we had Jason Flanzer from Corp Draw as well. And Timmy Wong, fan favorite. So we had a lot of great players on commentary, and we put on a really awesome event. I was really, really proud of what we did there.
And you had a lot of buy-in from people. I remember monitoring StimHack at the time and just following along, and there were heaps of people who were enthused to see the top decks and see the top players and what was going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, as far as like a competitive level tournament is concerned, like the level of competition was there with Worlds. It was possibly the most competitive tournament ever in Netrunner. I'm not selling myself short, I don't think. I mean, Worlds 2014 was a big one, but I think it rivaled that.
So do you have any plans in the future for doing maybe another SSCI next year, or maybe something even after the regionals event?
Yeah, there's nothing really in the works yet with regard to StimHack Regionals Invitational, but it's something I definitely want to do. I'm pretty busy with like the A&R PC thing. I didn't really foresee that coming. So I haven't announced anything yet. I haven't made any plans. But, you know, we did it the first time, and most of the difficulties that we had with the Store Champions Invitational was that there was so many players that it caused this tournament to last forever. I don't know if anybody who didn't follow it, we started at 10 in the morning, I think, Eastern Time, US, and then we ended at 2:30 in the morning. I think it was an 18-hour tournament.
I know there was a player in South Australia who joined the SSCI, and he was up in the middle of the night for quite a long time playing it.
Oh, yeah, he should have been up. He probably started playing, like, he probably started playing at midnight and wasn't finished until, like, dinner time the next day.
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
But, yeah, so for regional, if we do a regionals event, which I hope to do one, it'll be smaller. We already have, like, a lot of the work done in terms of, like, we had to get overlays made for the stream. We had to, you know, we had to do all these, like, sort of technical tests. And then one of the hardest thing was nobody's ever run a real-time Octagon tournament for Netrunner before. So basically, I had to sit down and figure out everything that could possibly go wrong and then do everything I could to mitigate all of those things ever happen. So basically, like, all the logistics are already figured out, so I think that it'll be a lot easier to get a regionals event going. And I want to do it, but I haven't started.
Yeah, so I just have a question, kind of along a similar vein to the considerations you had towards the time the event was run. But I know a lot of the time when a stream, or particularly a stream for a long event, like an 18-hour event, does go up, even just interacting with that stream or getting on past the time where it's gone offline is actually really difficult. Yeah, was it difficult to set up the way that commentators were maybe not playing, or the way you commentated in real time and streamed in real time, as opposed to maybe doing that after the fact and then showcasing your event after the fact?
Dean and I got some practice in. We did three sort of test runs, I guess. The first one was StimHack League 2 Finals. So we run leagues on Octagon on StimHack, and we ran a finals event where we cut to the top four of the standings of the league, and then we had them play round robin. So Dean and I streamed that together, and that went pretty smoothly. Dean's like got a really great setup, so I mean he was the one that had the stream going through his machine, and he did an amazing job. And was it difficult? I don't know. I didn't do it. It sounded like it was. Pretty stressful for him, but he got it done, and he did a really good job. But then after that, we also tested. We ran, I think, another StimHack event, and then we had a last chance qualifier the weekend before the Store Champions Invitational for people that weren't qualified but wanted to play. So we had a, you know, like I think a, like a 30-person tournament, and the top four players got to qualify for the Invitational.
So the last thing we want to talk about this episode, Dan, was something that we here at the Winning Agenda have been fairly passionate about for a while. We've spoken about it, particularly with Judge Tom Daniel when he's been on talking about tournament organizing and things like that. And recently you posted on Facebook and on StimHack about the StimHack floor rules. So something that you were and some others were going to put together in terms of not quite an infraction procedure guide, but more just like a document that's going to help tournament organizers and players in competitive events where a situation comes up and how directly to resolve it. So could you talk to us a bit about that?
Some people basically got into a discussion on StimHack. It was basically about like somebody broke a rule. You know, they made a mistake. It was something they shouldn't have done. They were apologetic about it. And some people were very mad that they broke this rule. Some people were, you know, less mad. But everybody seemed to agree that it's dumb that we don't have any sort of standards for what we should do in these sort of situations. We know what's against the rules. We know what's not against the rules. But tournament organizers are pretty much left on their own when it comes to deciding what to do when somebody does break the rules.
Are we talking about maybe not remembering to take a Desperado credit or like drawing extra cards? Or what sort of things are we talking about here?
This specific event was somebody used the buy twice rather than the once, which you're allowed to do. So they used the regionals buy twice. So that's one thing, but we're looking to address pretty much every rules concern that we can come up with. Unintentional rule breaking, like let's say you have two cards in your hand and your opponent is coming to access one of them and they accidentally knock the other one out of your hand. That's something that we can address. We have, you know, the intentional drawing thing.
Maybe accidentally advancing an asset that can't be advanced or something like
maybe
that.
Maybe accidentally, yeah. Maybe like taking a fourth click and advancing the Nisei in your remote server when you didn't have that. There's all sorts of things that can go wrong in a Netrunner game, and there's pretty much no precedent for what you're supposed to do as a TO when somebody calls you up and you see that happening. So basically what we wanted to do is we wanted to create a set of rules that we don't want to completely like throw away FFG's rules. We want these rules as a supplement for TOs that they can reference when something goes wrong. They can look at our set of procedures and sort of, you know, decide based on that, you know, something that the community has sort of all had input on, something reasonable to do in any given situation. So the way we want it to work is we want to write this document up as a community, and then we want to have tournament organizers opt to use it. So they can tell the players before the tournament starts, we're using the StimHack rules, so the players know and the TO knows basically what should happen anytime something like this happens, when you should call a judge, what the judge is supposed to do in any situation, stuff like that. I don't want to really get into the specifics on what we're going to do in any given situation yet, because it's a very young project, but we have big aspirations. Fantasy Flight is actually coming out with their own floor rules document soon, but from what we understand it doesn't really recommend any penalties or actions in the event that people break rules still. It's more of a clarification of what people are and aren't allowed to do. What we want to do is we want to have, a procedural document that lets TOs know what to do when something goes wrong.
Yeah, having infraction procedures are very important, and I certainly agree that particularly at, you know, more competitive or top-level events, there needs to be some sort of penalty for those kind of things. Even if they are a mistake, you still need to hold yourself to a high standard at those events. And FFG actually outlines that in their three tiers of play.
Yeah, I think one of the big things to recognize with this kind of thing is that there are really three aspects to the game, especially around tournaments. The first is the comprehensive rules of the game. The second is the tournament rules themselves, the way the tournament structure works and the way you as a player have to handle things like maybe how you declare how many credits you have, or the way you declare number of cards in hand, things you can't really lie about, or the way you actually have to present yourself in a tournament, like don't be punching your opponent in the face or things like that. And then the third aspect is actually not for the players to go by and not for the tournament itself to rule around, but a ruling set for TOs. And it's in Magic, it's called an IPG, and most other games have a version of this.
That's infraction procedure.
Procedure guide. And one of the, honestly, one of the best things that has lent to the longevity of Magic, and one of the best things for modern Magic is even just an app. Like there's an app called MTG Guide, and on the MTG Guide, it just has the IPG written down. And any player can access this, and any TO can access this. And when something comes up, all they do is they go to the MTG guide and they look in the section and it says, what's the philosophy about this section? How has the community and how has Wizards of the Coast, the creators of the game, how have they responded to this situation? How have they thought that they want to respond to it? What philosophically are they doing about it? And then how do you handle that as a judge or how do you handle that as a TO? And simply having a case-by-case, concrete way for people to look at this guide and just employ it straight into their event has been so good for the game. Dan, I 100% agree and 100% commend you for going out of your way to do something like this, because it will be amazing for the state of the game, 100%.
Yeah, we really wanted to contribute to that too, if we get the opportunity.
Yeah, I think it's about transparency for players, Dan, and you touched on that, that if a tournament organizer can say, we're using these StimHack floor rules, it just gives the players 100% confidence about what the rules they're playing by are. And everybody makes mistakes, you know, people draw extra cards, they take extra credits, they cards slip off the top of R&D. And if there's clear rules and a clear set of guidelines for how to deal with those issues, it just prevents feel-bads and it means that there's consistency, which is great.
If a TO opts to use the StimHack floor rules, is there anything in the current FFG tournament rules that prohibits them from doing so?
No. One of our main goals is to make sure that our rules do not conflict with FFG rules in any way. Yeah, so there's no explicit FFG rule that says, you know, a TO can't adopt a different set of rules explicitly. Obviously, it's implied that the FFG rules are the rules you're supposed to follow. However, the FFG rules give TOs a ton of leeway in terms of, you know, what sort of rulings they're allowed to make and stuff like that. So basically, our goal is to make sure that we don't conflict with FFG's rules in any way. And at that point, we're basically just filling in the gaps where they don't have any rules. And that's all okay, because we're just providing TOs a sort of, you know, a guidebook on, you know, how to deal with situations. So that way, you know, TOs across the world can deal with those same situations in a consistent manner.
I agree with you. I think I understand what FFG were getting at when they were like, let's give the TOs plenty of room to breathe. But the problem with that is, I know that we experienced it here when we played in maybe 5 or 6 store championships, not even outside of our state, but even just within the same city. And the consistency was very low in terms of how the events were run and how the procedures actually went.
Well, I really wanted to ask a question that sort of piggybacked off the two topics we've discussed in great length. So, you know, with you know, things like the ANR Pro Circuit and the SSCI, where we're seeing a lot of fan-generated, community-generated tournaments, and with, you know, the actual community supporting itself by, you know, creating its own house rules that, I guess, better solidify how things are handled during the play of Netrunner. Do you think that we'll ever get to this point, and I'm asking this to everyone, do you think we'll ever get to this point where the fan-supported, you know, tournaments and competitive play is sort of eclipsing that that's provided by FFG? Do you think maybe FFG is likely to take a lot of this information and grow their own tournament? What are your thoughts?
Do I think that we're going to ever eclipse FFG's tournaments? Yes. In fact, I mean, a lot of the players that I've talked to have played in other games. I think the big three that people talk about are War Machine, Hordes, which are both miniatures games, and HeroClix, which is another miniatures game. Anyway, all three of those games, the communities sort of, you know, they basically took the competitive level of the game above and beyond what the game creators were willing to do, and very quickly, yeah, they eclipsed the tournament scene of their official thing. Liam says Pokemon is another example. There's a bunch of them. Super Smash Brothers had no official competitive scene, and they built a pretty big one. So yeah, I think that it's totally possible that we eclipse FFG's tournaments, and I look forward to it. And in terms of what FFG is willing to do, whether they're willing to sort of incorporate us into the official tournaments, which is something that I think that I hope that they will do, and that would be the best thing I think that could happen for us. Maybe they could step up their own game. That's another great thing that could happen to this. Or they could just ignore us and let us be, and, you know, just let the community drive everything with minimal support from them. And, you know, I think we'll do a great job regardless of what happens with them.
Yeah, I'm remembering a few weeks ago where Quinn was talking about the London circuit that's developing with like store leagues feeding into like a big London championship. And I do really think like this is just another example of that, where it's just happening online rather than in this local circuit. And I do really think that there is the capacity for FFG just to take this structure, this community built structure, and create a system for it to flourish in. Allow Melbourne to just pick up FFG's structure, or just allow any city in the world with 4 or 5 stores in it, or with 150 players in it, just to pick up this structure where they can play for the other 6 months of the year. I think it has the capacity to really be very cleanly incorporated into Netrunner's competitive scene at the moment.
I really feel like, you know, especially with all the information we've been given, it sounds like it's even more critical now than ever that the community, you know, go that extra step and support, you know, your local Netrunner community in these tournaments that you have, whether it's through forums like the SSCI or through the ANR Pro Circuit. You know, growing your own community is the best way to make, you know, the things you love about it even bigger and even better. So please, if you haven't played in any of these, you know, go out and support them.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that after our discussion about these circuits and the way they could potentially feed into some other worlds-like events that have international players competing against each other, I encourage anyone who's got a local meta that's interested in keying into that to get in touch with us or get in touch with the ANR Pro Circuit people through their website, because if we can grow that, it's going to be fantastic.
Excellent. That's about all the time we have this week for The Winning Agenda. If you want to get in contact with us, you can do it via our Facebook page, The Winning Agenda. You can hit us up on Twitter at Winning Agenda, or you can shoot us along an email. Our email address is thewinningagenda@gmail.com. Thank you so much to Dan and Hollis as well for joining us this week. We look forward to having you back next week as well. So everybody who's been happy to have them in their ears, you can look forward to that for episode 34 as well. Thanks so much, guys.
Take it easy.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is the bit where I usually like edit in a bit that was funny, like an outtake or something, but the episode with Dan was so tight that I got nothing, and I feel like we couldn't really go back on not having it. So I'm just going to read All of the Peripheral by William Gibson. It's a great novel. You should check it out. Chapter 1, The Haptics. They didn't think Flynn's brother had PTSD, but that sometimes the haptics glitched him. They said it was like phantom limbs, ghosts of the tattoos he'd worn in the war, put there to tell him when to run, when to be still, when to do the badass dance, which direction and what range. So they allowed him some disability for that, and he lived in the trailer down by the creek. An alcoholic uncle lived there when they were little, veteran of summer.